God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. So there's a theme today, temptation. If I said, what is temptation, what would you say? Give me a definition of temptation. Something that's hard to resist. Anybody else? Pleasurable. Chocolate. Extra chocolate. Extra dark chocolate. There's a real tendency to see temptation in terms of moral categories, right? It's often a choice between a good thing and a bad thing, and unfortunately the bad thing is often seen as pleasurable and the good thing is not seen as pleasurable, which is often how it gets characterized. So I'm curious about how these two stories, I mean the Genesis story and then the Matthew story, frame it, because while morality is involved, I don't think it's really about, these aren't stories that talk about temptation in terms of moral choice. I want to talk first of all about the Genesis story. To be clear that, you know, Genesis 1 through 11 is not science, it's not history. Often we approach Genesis 1 and 11 as science and history, and instead we call it a myth, meaning it's not science and not history, but it's a myth that is deeply true. Right? And so it's the deeply true part. It's not true in the way that science is true. It's not true in the way that history is true. But it's deeply and true in terms of what it says about being human and what it means to be a human being in this world. And, you know, the story goes in Genesis that in the beginning, God is hovering over the surface of the chaos of the waters. And God says, let there be. And boom, there is. And it is good. And God creates and separates light from darkness and land from the seas, and brings about the planets from the stars and brings about creepy crawling things and plants and animals. And then God creates humans in God's image. God creates them male and female, and it is good. So the point of the story, the point of that myth, if you will, is that there is something good, fundamentally good, that God creates. It is good, and when God creates humans, they are created in God's image. There's something in them that participates in the divine. There's something in them that is shaped and influenced and inspired by the divine in some way. That's the first part of that story. Then you get into Genesis 2, and there's a different slant on creation. And most biblical scholars think there's actually a different creation story, where instead of God just saying, let there be, and it is, and it's this powerful God, God is instead on the earth already walking the land, and he takes the dust of the earth, he takes the clay, and he shapes it. And God breathes God's breath into Adam. And so in the first story, you have this something divine about being human, this being humans being created in the image of God, in the image of the divine. But in the second story, we're dust, we're clay, we're the stuff of the earth that bears the breath of God. And so there's this contrast already set up in those stories about being human. There's something about this tension about being able to be created in the image of God and yet being able to be being created of clay and dust. That's where today's then story gets set up. it says that, God, after God creates Adam and God then plants this garden, and plants a garden which Adam is in, and God says, you can eat of any tree in the garden. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so you're meant to imagine there's this man and this woman who are in this garden, and there's something delightful about being able to eat things from trees, right? Most of us, unfortunately, a lot of us get our fruit from the grocery store, and we don't ever see a tree attached to it, right? And it just is there, and we have to pay money. But you don't get the delight and pleasure of just walking through a garden, and all of a sudden, there's this tree, and the fruit is in season, and you eat it, and it's sweet, and it's good, and it's phenomenal, right? This is the experience of ancient peoples. There's something about a fruit tree, and the ability to eat. It's an amazing thing. You don't have to, you plant a tree originally, but then you come back, a decade later, and all of a sudden there's food. It's like free food, right? You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to hunt for it. You don't have to grow it. It's just free fruit going on trees. Fruit trees are amazing things. And so the Garden of Eden, here Adam and Eve live in this place where they get to walk around and they get to, you know, they get to taste bananas and mangoes and papayas and, you know, whatever it is, apples and pears and, you know, I don't know what kind of kumquats and kiwis, right? Who knows? I don't know about the fauna of Eden, or that's flora of Eden. But that's it, right? So you're meant to imagine, wow, there is this thing where there's this point about being human where there's this delight in the goodness of creation, and you're delighting in the goodness of creation. And so one day, you know, there's the serpent who's, you know, going through creation, and the serpent is craftier than all the other animals. And the serpent just kind of casually and innocuously says to Eve and Adam, who is with her, the text is very clear that Adam is with her, right? That Eve is not by herself when this happens. Adam is with her. You know, but the serpent says to Eve, did God tell you you could eat of the trees of the garden? And he's like, oh, yeah. We get to eat of the trees of the garden. It's great. There's this one and there's that one. There's that one. Like, that one's really good. I love it. Jesus, but the one in the middle, we can't eat of the one in the middle. Because God said if you eat of the one in the middle, you're going to die. And the serpent makes his move. And he's like, oh, you won't die. God doesn't want you to eat of that tree because if you eat of that tree, your eyes will be opened. And you'll become like God, knowing the difference between good and evil. You're going to become like God, right? So that's already this tension. Here is these creatures made out of, you know, Adam was clay. Eve is, you know, a rib taken out of Adam's side. And, you know, these earthy creatures that are going to become like God. That's the temptation, is to become like God, even though they're created in the image of God. That's part of the tension in this story. He's like, no, your eyes will be opened and you'll become like God. That's what this story is about. It's about the weight and the burden of being, of bearing the divine, of being divine. Because it's ultimately God who knows good, and it's ultimately God who knows evil. And what does it mean when we take that burden upon ourselves? So Eve looks at this fruit. She's never looked at this fruit before. She looks at this fruit and she says, and she notices that it is good for food. It's not a poisonous fruit. It's actually good for food. And it's beautiful to the eyes. It's beautiful to behold. There's something very attractive about it. And it's to be desired because it makes one wise. That's what she sees when she's looking at this fruit. So it's like, huh, looks like it's really edible. It's very attractive, and it'll make me wise. Why not? What's to stop me? So she takes a bite of the fruit, and she gives it to Adam, who is with her throughout this whole thing. And he bites from the fruit. And the serpent was right. Their eyes are opened, and they know the difference between good and evil. They now have to bear the weight of being moral beings. And, you know, the text goes on, and one of the things they know is that they're naked and they're ashamed and they feel shame, and then they hide from God and because they feel guilty, and then they're blaming each other and you know, saying, well, the serpent made me do it and the woman made me do it and the man, you know, made me do it, and then there's punishment. And it's all about this story. I mean, what the deep truth underneath this myth is what it means to be moral beings in this world, to have to bear the weight of being able to do good. Like, we can do such good in this world. Like, our actions, our loves, our relationships, like, we can do things that encourage, we can do things that build up, we can do things that give life, we can do things that create peace, we can do things that create beauty. There is such goodness that we can do. We can be gentle, we can be kind, we can be generous, we can be hopeful. There's such good that we can do. And we can do evil. We can hurt. We can cause pain. We can be envious and jealous. We can be self-indulgent and self-centered. We can cause destruction, right? And tear things down in ways that are not helpful. And it's having to live in that in-between place of bearing that weight. Here we are, creatures of clay, creatures of dust. We're just, you know, creaturely things, and now we have to bear this divine weight. Being good and of being evil, of having the capacity, of having the knowledge of good and evil. That's what this story is about. We tend to treat this story as if there was a real choice there, as if you know, this was a history, as if historically there was a real Eve, and she could have made a choice not to eat of the tree, right? And then you imagine this alternate reality. Well, if Eve didn't eat of the tree, then we'd all still be in the Garden of Eden. We'd all still be in the Garden of Eden, although, you know, that would mean that all of us would have to resist eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And, you know, the tree of knowledge is, as it said, it's good for food. It's beautiful to behold, and it's to be desired because it makes one wise, right? You have to imagine 6 billion people resisting eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and getting everybody kicked out of the garden, right? I mean, that's not what this story, that's when we try to make this story history. It's not history. There wasn't a choice. I don't think the story even imagines that Eve and Adam really had a real choice. It's not what the story is about. It's not about them making moral choices and choosing the wrong thing. It's about them bearing the weight and the burden of being created in the image of God. And knowing the difference between good and evil. And the real temptation in the story is that the serpent tempts them away from their relationship with God. That's the temptation. Did God really say? Can you trust what God really said? You can't trust what God really said. God had an agenda. He wanted to keep you from being wise. You should really do what you want to do. That's the temptation. It's a temptation away from that the relationship one has with the divine. It's a temptation away from being, because when one is in relationship with the divine, that's the divine is, you know, it's God that helps bear the weight of having the capacity for good and evil. The temptation is to say, no, you got to do it on your own. It's your choice. You got to make good choices. As if we knew how to make good choices all the time. It's also, I think, those themes are what I see in the story of Jesus and his temptation. He goes off into the desert. He fasts to fast for 40 days, 40 nights. He gets hungry, as happens when you don't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. And then the devil shows up and says, so you're hungry. If you're the Son of God, turn these stones into loaves of bread. As if that would be a sin, right? We treat it as if that would be a sin. I mean, is there a sin in turning stones to loaves of bread? Is there a sin in eating bread when you're hungry? Is that what Jesus is being tempted to? I don't think so. I mean, Jesus' response is, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from that proceeds from God. And he's quoting Moses in the book of Deuteronomy, who Moses is about to lead the Israelites into the promised land, into this land flowing of milk and honey, into this land and this place where there will be abundance. And Moses says, be careful, you're about to experience abundance, but beware, humans don't live by bread alone. You don't live by the stuff that you consume, like the stuff that you own. No, you live by being in relationship, in communion, in conversation with God. That's what gives life. It's not the bread. That's Jesus' response. He's like, you want me to focus on the bread? Like, no, it's not about the bread. It's about being in conversation with God. And so, you know, the devil takes him to the top of the temple and says, and the devil quotes Psalm 91 for him and says, you know, jump. You could jump. Because the psalm says he will not let your foot be dashed against a stone. His angels will take care of you. Jesus is like, well, you forget the rest. I mean, the Psalm 91 is this amazing psalm about how God protects and how God, provides shelter and how God, cares for God's people. And Jesus is like, it's about being in relationship with the divine and the provision of the divine. And Jesus is like, that's about me trusting God, not trying to kind of manipulate God into doing stuff. I'm not going to manipulate God. I want to be in relationship with God. The third temptation is, the devil shows him all the kingdoms in some sort of vision, all the kingdoms and all the power of the world. And the devil says, worship, this will be all yours if you bow down and worship me. And Jesus is like, so the temptation is clearly, this could be yours, this could be you, you could be powerful. And Jesus is like, no, worship the Lord your God and worship God alone. Be in communion, be in relationship, right? The temptation is always this movement away. I don't know if I have much more to say about it other than that. I mean, it was curious to me to note and reflect on these things. This week is it's not about the choice between doing a good thing or a bad thing, doing the pleasurable thing and the unpleasurable thing, between chocolate and not chocolate, right? It is really this struggle we have of bearing the weight of who we are. This struggle we have of bearing the weight of our own moral responsibility. And how do we do that in relationship with the God who does care for us and love us? Like how do we use a relational paradigm for these things rather than a moral legal paradigm? Amen.